Rob! Hey!
Hey! How is everybody on this beautiful July day?
Peachy.
Peachy?
Just peachy. How are you doing today?
I'm doing terrific. My granddaughter's here. My daughter's here. They've been here for almost 3 weeks. And so I had a break, nice. And I went for a swim with them, and life gets better every day. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, we're lucky. Awesome. We're all lucky. We're all blessed. And you guys keep rocking and rolling. Tell me what's on your mind. Tell me some good stories.
Oh, boy. No, I'm just, we're busy. We're busy, Rob.
So
I think last week we brought in, what guys, what was our number that we brought in last week? 6 million maybe?
I think.
Maybe more than that.
Yeah. Yep.
In the last month, we've probably brought in 10 million bucks, or close to, anyway.
Wow.
Yeah.
We'll have it in motion.
With more coming in to add to that number. So we won the business with our prospect. Then we were, Tom and I presented a plan to virtually. So we won that business. So we have 1.4 for them that came in, and Tom is getting on a call next week to bring in another 1.9 roughly. So we're just, and then additional assets came in for other clients, but we're really busy, so, which is good.
It's wonderful. Being rewarded for your good work always is the best. That's terrific. Congratulations. Okay, that's enough. Thanks. Congratulations. See ya.
Yep, we're wrapped up. Thanks, Rob.
Oh, that's great. That's great. What can I do for you guys? What do you think you need? What's missing?
You can make the coronavirus.
Can you get us back in the office so we can get back in the office?
You get a vaccine,
Get a vaccine. I think that's coming. I think that's coming.
Yeah.
The market keeps telling us that it's coming. We couldn't have a better, let's face it. We've been blessed with an economic stock market recovery. I don't know where the economic recovery is coming, but the rest of it is terrific. So.
Yeah.
Your clients have got to be happy. Reviews have got to be terrific.
Yeah. People are somewhat surprised where they're at, given all the circumstance.
I think clients are ready for like that in-person review though.
I know.
Feel like our book, we've done a lot over the phone. But I feel like our book is starting to come back around to us, and they just really want to get together in person. So
but you're closing business during a pandemic, okay? That's amazing.
Yep.
I don't hear that. I hear, well, we're going to, everybody's waiting until the pandemic's over. And I mean, I don't know. I'm just not hearing that kind of story from others. Who knows what is really going on, right? But for you guys, the pandemic is working.
Well, I think it was our approach we took in the beginning. I mean, we knew, when we had to all start working remotely and working from home, then it was going to be a different time and a different world. But I think we embraced it and wrapped our arms around everything that we were still trying to do and just continued driving that train. Mm-hmm. And just really have won some great clients and business, so...
That's
it hasn't
terrific.
Been easy, but we're still, doing it and working through it. So,
was it? What's the origin of these clients? Are they? Where did they come from?
Referrals from existing clients. One of the bigger ones is just was basically a smaller account that we've worked with the grandkids and some of the family members in some aspect. And, you know, the grandfather had an account here, and I guess maybe just through discussions in the family and whatnot, decided to bring all his money in.
Wow.
So I think it does come back to client communication, touching, service, you
know,
all
that. I think
that's
the one thing that, yeah, that I would piggyback on Mike with. It, you know, I spoke about this on our last call, but I think it's just the marketing and the service calls, the next best action. That's a lot of drip on the clients. And I feel like now since they're seeing our names more consistently in front of them, they're maybe picking up the phone to call us versus somebody else when they do have a life-changing event in their financial world. I don't know if you guys would agree with that, but that's kind of what I'm seeing. You know, so I think forcing us to go remotely in the digital world has allowed us to get all of our clients signed up for Next Best Action and really deliver that service, the service calls and the different things that we've done for our book. But I feel like everything that we have done with everything that I just said has continued to win us business.
You know, we're still trying to retrain the clients in that. Even right now we're dealing with somebody that the old advisor who we inherited his book, he told him, hey, just keep that account there. He wasn't trying to get all of the business. He was telling him to leave it. And so clients are doing stuff, and after the fact, it's like, hey, you know you can call us, right? Anything money-related at all, call us first. And so we're still trying to get clients in that process, that mindset of, hey, let's call the team first. If something came up with money, or what do you think we should do with, you know, these accounts, you know, whatever it is, just trying to reprogram the clients to come to us first with anything.
Mm-hmm. And that's a really great point, Tom. You know, like Tom said, you know, our senior partner, he did tell a lot of his clients to leave things outside of Morgan Stanley for whatever reason. So, and even though we've been almost a year and a half since he retired, we're still finding clients say that to us. So I don't even think we've, you know, maybe even hit close to what additional assets, even though we're finding them and, you know, re-educating our clients that we're the first point of contact, asking for business. We're not afraid to ask for business where Rob was. But even, you know, with a client the other day, she, you know, was talking about a small account, and she's like, well, Rob told me to keep it outside of here, and, you know, so we continue to find that as well. So I think it is re-educating and just trying to...
So those would be IRA rollovers or small IRAs, or what kind of accounts would they be?
I think it was just things that Rob didn't want to take the time to deal with to figure out the process, to be quite honest with you.
It's been a wide range.
Yeah, it's a wide range, Rob.
Yeah, there's no rhyme or reason, really.
Mm-mm. No.
Maybe they didn't have quite $1 million, and he didn't want to open a new Roth, so they pay a fee. He wasn't always thinking managed money. You know, if you could help us understand his thinking, that would be helpful. I'm very just kidding.
Even how he assigned, you know, our ABC clients was definitely different than how we see it. So, you know, when Rob retired, we took our whole book and sorted from revenue down, right? Who,
sure.
What clients pay us down? Because, you know, that's where we need to meet that service. So even that was just a really strange way with how he earmarked his A clients. So, if he thought they had additional assets outside, even though he wouldn't ask for them, it was an A client. So I don't, it was just, everything was just a little odd, but.
He was not a very good listener. He wasn't a good listener.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of made up his mind early on with clients and relationships. who they were, what they had, so on and so forth. And, you know, in some cases, like a brother and sister, you know, he'd sort of treat the brother differently than the sister. And we've come to find that maybe the sister's a better client. You know, she didn't take money out. She listened to us. She didn't, you know what I mean? So,
one of our senior clients, you know, her son, Rob, our senior partner, then retired, and, you know, the family kept saying, well, David doesn't have any money. And last year we brought $2 million in for David because we took the time to say, hey, let's do a financial plan for you. Let's see what's out there. He had a triggering event. Then he was let go from his job really close to retirement. You know, we wrapped our arms around it and did a plan, talked through what it would look like if he brought the assets in, and we won $2 million. But again, there was this opinion or judgment that he didn't have any money and was never really worked with over the years. So again, we're finding even, you know, that opportunity within the book.
It's really good. Now, how do you manage your pipeline? Because you probably have a fairly robust pipeline if you're getting this many closings.
Well, we do constantly revisit and update. So we have a team sort of marketing meeting after this today. We just constantly review where we're at, cash wise, what's out there, who we've talked to, where we're, you know, reasons for the money not moving, where it can move, so on and so forth. So I would just say, you know, the best, we're very, we try to just continue to all hold each other accountable, I guess.
Yeah. So what Mike's driving at there is we have two different money in motion reports that Melissa's designed. Melissa, you can, I don't need to steal your thunder. You can tell them what we have.
Yeah. But what, and I didn't mean to talk over you there, but, so the two different tracking. So what I did, from the WAA on the team, with all the life use that we have been doing, I went and created a separate spreadsheet from our current money in motion. So our current money in motion is anything that we're going to be bringing in and closing within the next 30, 60, 90 days. Then our life view, tracking money in motion, this is everything that I have captured on any external assets then from the financial planning piece that we have done with the client. So then, you know, down the road, then we're not missing any opportunity when we're meeting with them for their in-person reviews or we're talking to them throughout the year, then we know that that is still something, potential assets down the road, to bring in for that client when they would retire or when they would, we have some clients that will inherit money. So anything that we did from the financial planning piece, I tried to capture just so we don't lose sight of it. But our current pipeline is the money emotion report that Mike and Tom are both talking to, or talking about. And we review that once a week as a team to make sure, okay, did we bring this money in? If we didn't, where are we at? What's the next step for the client or prospect? And then we just go from there and you know, attack it however discussed.
How often do you review the external asset money in motion plan B or number two?
You know, that's one that we just newly created. But I know for Mike and Tom with our clients, they know what the clients have out there. But again, from my perspective, I just tried to capture everything just so we had it in one place and we knew what we had, you know, in the future. Probably wouldn't be a bad idea to start reviewing that consistently. But it was a new tracking that I just recently created.
So do you think that would be a monthly? Would monthly be enough?
You say recently on that, Melissa, but you did that while we were still in the office, didn't you?
Time flies some, so I'm not sure. I'm looking at it, and I'm like,
yeah, I think you did that. I think you were doing that end of last year, beginning of this year, as we were going,
because
we were going back through looking for,
I thought I
we were
did
doing one
we
of your WAA
time.
Reports.
No,
I think you were doing the WAA report. You went back through different plans that you ran, and we were keeping track of it. I thought it was while we were still in the office. Either way, it's been,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, no, I thought I did it when we were out, but whatever.
So,
yeah,
I'm just...
the monthly would probably not be a bad idea.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, you guys are really good at this. Let's document it, and then let's ritualize it. Because, I mean, your rituals are working. They're working. And you seem very, you seem to do well with process.
Yeah.
You like
build on process.
Yeah. You like process. You work with process. You like rituals. You work with rituals. You know, you go through the money in motion, 30, 60, 90 days, every week. So I just put this in as once a month, it goes into that meeting and say, hey, supplemental piece to this meeting is our money in motion long term, more than 90 days, more than a year. It looks like this is going to be a year plus out there. And, you know, things, time moves quickly, and all of a sudden, this guy's IRA is coming due, right? I mean, he's going to retire in 6 months. So he goes right on to the money in motion for 6 months out.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, so you just flip them. So I think that,
mm-hmm.
I like it a lot.
But it helps you.
Yeah.
It helps you keep track of clients that might not be, or prospects out there that may not look on paper like you should take the time, you know, and I don't mean that, you know, in a bad way, but.
And I think And I think that that's the piece that we don't, you know, we were trying to not lose sight of as well, is we want to, you know, the potential for some is there, but it might not just be in this moment because of where they're at and their work life or, you know, their age. So, like Mike said, we still don't want to, you know, we want to maybe provide extra service to them, you know, with the potential down the road. So.
So what would you do differently for those people versus just the 12-4-2? Nothing? Or is it an awareness thing?
It's awareness. I mean, I think what it means is you don't get rid of them.
Yeah, I think that looking at, yeah, exactly. I mean, so when we were going through the book to earmark, okay, when we do have the opportunity to move clients to an FA, we are not going to get rid of someone who has potential down the road. So, and put them into our 12-4-2 service model. So exactly what Mike just said, we're not going to earmark them to move because we know down the road they might be a $1 million client.
Okay, so here's the thing. You really, until they have money with you or a sizable amount of money, that becomes, 12-4-2 becomes a challenge, right?
Mm-hmm.
So do you call them quarterly? What do you do when somebody literally has, you know, he's got a $1 million rollover and it's coming in 2 years? How do you handle that?
I think it's just staying in touch. I mean, I think there's, you know, there's ways to do it effectively, whether through, you know, just touching, you know, emails here and there, phone call here and there, how's things going? And quite honestly, Rob, our entire challenge this whole time has been trying to orchestrate a proper 12-4-2 because mm-hmm. we still are sitting on way too many accounts. And there's nobody to give them to. And we've asked the questions multiple times and that's fallen on deaf ears. And, you know, because of that, you know, I do think it slows us down in some respect. You know, when we go through our tasks every morning, the clients that are nuisances, so on and so forth, that we would happily get rid of. So, you know, to answer your question, we've been battling through the sort of the rigors of trying to establish that this whole time in this program. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, quite frankly, that's been one of my biggest frustrations with this program is that, you know, we're doing it, but we're not doing it, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we're all at home. So I couldn't tell you last time I saw one of your folders, and it was March. Okay. I couldn't tell you the last time we were able to say we all have 100 clients, because that hasn't happened this entire time. Even though we've gone through the process to segment them and we know who we would keep and all those things, you know, Melissa, Wendy, and I and Tom have just, you know, we're drinking through a fire hose some days. And I think, you know, maybe we'd be more successful. You know, I don't doubt that we wouldn't be more successful if we had the ability to actually, you know, do the program the way the program's designed. Because we have more time to prospect, we have more time to drift and talk to clients. So quite frankly, our success is in spite of these sort of difficulties with the program. And you know, I think, you know, we've probably been better served to wait until we could have that type of situation or have more team members to split the clients out amongst or whatever it may be. But it is what it is. You know, we're just Amish horses. You know, we got the blinders on, and we're just going to keep moving, you know, in spite of all that.
So no good answer, right? No.
No good answer. There isn't one. I mean,
Mike said, I mean, we've adopted a lot of great things from the Supernova process. You know, we have structure, more structure than what we did with our book. But it is still a challenge because we still have, you know, 400 clients and we still have to service and service calls and do the things that we need to do. So, you know, it has been challenging. But we just continue to do what we have been doing and we've been successful, you know, with bringing in assets and training and working with our clients and
because we are overly process driven, you know, we probably, you know, we spend that extra time, you know, going through every call and task and note in the system every morning and following back up every afternoon as a group, you know, we have to do that. So, you know, it is what it is, you know, we can't change the game, you know, so we're just, you know, we're going to do it the best we can.
Well, I'd like to see you guys, you know, what your productivity and your balance in your life and et cetera, when you get skinny, you know, when you get,
sure,
you know, when you get to 80 clients each and can actually,
I agree,
have some, take a breath, right? And, well, a tip of the hat to you for doing what you're doing while you're doing it, because I think everybody else feels your frustration and they have not continued to press forward. In some cases, they've just put me on hold since March 23rd, you know. So, and some of it is internet problems and whatever. I don't question that it's real. But I think you guys have made a lot of progress, and I think you've proven to yourself that you can operate in adverse conditions and be very efficient and still very proud of your practice, which I think is fabulous. So, and you should be very proud of it because you're doing very well.
I think it's our mentality, and not to pick on other groups and teams and whatever. You know, we really try not to concern ourselves with what anybody else is doing.
Yeah.
But all, you know, we're young in this business.
Yep.
You know, Tommy and I both, and Melissa, you know, we're all young. Mm-hmm. And, you know, since we all started, you know, we all came in after the crash. The firm's never done any of us any favors in terms of help. You know, the finish line gets moved on us every year. You know, it's funny how it all works. They don't give you the time or the pat on the back until they realize it's probably too late. And that's okay. We don't need that. We don't really care. We actually would prefer to be left alone. But it's not. I think our mentality with it is we haven't gotten there yet. We're not guys that sit in corner offices. We're not, you know, we've never been told, you know, we've never been invited out as the top producers in the office. You know, we're not looked at that way, even though our revenue would suggest it, because, you know, currently 50% of it goes to a guy sitting down at his pool right now. And that's okay. But I think our mentality is different. You know, we all look at it. I mean, at least I do. I won't speak to the team, but, you know, we have 3.5 years left of, maybe almost 4 of this FAP program with Rob that left. And we'll see where we're all at then. But I'd bet you $1 and a nickel. We're in pretty good shape by the time that happens. And,
oh, sure.
You know, I think we'll we want to be better with our systems. We want to be better with our processes. We're constantly picking on the things that are good and the things that are bad. We don't rest on our laurels, so to speak, that we've just always done it this way. And it's why we made a bunch of money in the 80s. So, you know, it is what it is. It's a new age. I think that's also part of the reason we're probably attracting assets. We are young. You know, we're not going to retire before they do. We're not going to die before they do, hopefully. You know, all of those things, right? So, you know, sky's the limit.
It's great. What do you think you need from me? If you could have more of me, what would you want to hear about?
I really like some of your touches that you give us about, you know, just sort of the centers of influences, the mastermind groups. I think some of your ideas in terms of how to market and network, you know, while we may do some of those things, I think it's always a good reminder of the various things that have worked or that you see has value. You know, I think just us having our monthly call with you, you know, as we're going now, it's always a good chance for us all to kind of stop and take heed of where we're at and what we've done this past, because we are Melissa wasn't lying when she says we're very busy. I mean, I think we just get the daily grind of running through it. I think at various stages we all kind of get burnt out, and because we don't see each other on a daily basis, I think sometimes it's hard to, you know, read each other, as to what's going on in each other's lives. So this monthly call is always a good time to just kind of reflect on what's happened and where we're going. But as far as I think, where I can do some more value, just more of those ideas on how to continue to drive our network. That's the big one for me.
Let me give you a story. And it may not apply because you guys are – you seem to be problem solvers and not, you don't get stuck and you're not shy. But let me just use this analogy because I think it's a good one. My granddaughter's here, as I said, my daughter's here. So, you know, what do you do during COVID-19 with the family all hunkered down? We have, you know, it's nice life. We have a pool and we have fun and everything, but you know, we were around the dining room table building puzzles. So, at around 10 o'clock, everybody went to bed. I was going to go to bed. And then I got looking at the puzzle and I started building pieces and putting them in. And then I got stuck about 11:30 and went to bed thinking that, and I had said some not too nice things to the puzzle on the way out the door, right? I was like, you know, you damn puzzle.
Yeah.
So then I wake up and I'm going for my morning bike ride. And before I do, I look at the puzzle and boom, there's two pieces that I don't know how I missed them. They were obvious, right? And then come back and have a coffee and look at the puzzle and there's 3 more pieces and they just fit in, right? And so what I thought about was in in prospecting, we tend to want to close the person the first time we look at the puzzle, right? We sit down, we figure it out, and we close them or we don't close them. We don't think of it as a puzzle, and we don't necessarily think of it as fun. We think of it as a job. And so I think one of the things that you can do is to say to yourself, when you're looking at cases where you've got somebody that's, you know, big but a little tricky, you can't quite figure out how to close them, is to kind of force yourself to ritualize your contact with them. So you do that. You've got your 60, 90 day, but to me, those are people you've pretty much know you're going to close, right? More the people in the 2 years from now, 3 years from now, or now, but you can't figure them out. They're a rollover, but they're not responding like you want them to. So how do you close them, and what do you do? My suggestion is to build a system in where you look at them more frequently, but without the intensity that you did the first time. Meaning that, let's say you got a person that they're ready, but they're not ready for you. Okay? And so rather than, you know, just putting them aside and never calling them again, or putting them on a monthly call, make a folder for them as if they become a client, or put them in your tickler system and look at them every 2 weeks. Just take them out and look at it with fresh eyes. The other analogy to the puzzle is share that with somebody else on your team. Because my son-in-law walked over to the puzzle and said, "Rob, this whole side belongs on the other side of the puzzle, right?" And I said, "Damn, I didn't see that." So not only should you use fresh eyes for you, but you should introduce the puzzle to one of your teammates and have them look at it and see if they can come up with a piece that should be on the other side of the puzzle. And I think that combination will bring you more results than you just trying to do it yourself on the first go around or the second go around. I mean, as human beings, we're procrastinators. We're, you know, we don't like no's. We don't want to, you know, get in a position where we're going to get a no. You know, we don't like rejection. So you, remember, I always said that Supernova is doing all the things that other people aren't willing to do. So that's what Supernova prospecting is, doing all the things that other people aren't willing to do. So revisiting prospects, sharing that with others to try and come up with ideas, be creative, and, you know, unbundle the problem and see what it is that you can do to make it work. And I think that will be, I mean, I'm sure you do it, but the question is, do you do it all the time? So that's what I would suggest doing at that monthly meeting for the, you know, the external asset money. And look at that. Right. Anything more than your 90 days, you know, 6 months, a year, 9 months, anything that's out there kind of do some case study work and treat it like a puzzle rather than treat it like life and death, you know. And I always said this, don't get rid of them until you get a no. Assuming you like the person and you want them as a client, and they haven't said no, you know. If they haven't said no, then you just assume they're going to be your client. Now, how can we move that forward? The other thing that I find that people don't do is they don't move to the next step. They tend to do something and then there's no next step. So every time you interact with a client, you establish a next step to move the ball down the field. So the next step is this. Let's get together a week from now. What's our next step? Okay. If you don't do that, then it just sort of floats out there with nobody in control. Make sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Certainly.
Yeah. It was an interesting way to look at things. And your brain is never the same, by the way. You know, we have a saying that you never step in the same river twice. Because you're always different, and the river's different, the water's different. So you never interact with the same client because you're different and they're different, and time has gone on. So they may be in a completely different place. I'll tell you a quick story. I went in to prospect. When I started, Tony Cloutman said, Rob, go and cold call the building and just say hello to everybody and see if they can use your help. So I did. I went upstairs and I was in a 30-story building, and I cold called the entire building. I ended up getting a really good attorney out of it. But it taught me that if I could get to see people, they would like to do business with me. Well, one of our good friends was a secretary for a big guy, a big developer. And I went to see her, and at the same time, I wanted the opportunity to see him. I went to see him. He told me flat out, no, I don't want you. I've got a guy. I'm all set. So I came back to see her and just say hello to Mrs. Reynolds, because she was a friend of the family. I'm in there in the morning before he gets in there, and he comes in. And he looked at me, and he said, you again. He said, come in here. He sat down, and he said, you know, if my salesman were as persistent as you, I'd do it a whole lot better. I'm going to open an account with you because you're so persistent. Well, guess what? I wasn't.
But you see,
he was in a different place in the river, right? And I just happened to be there. I just happened to be at the same time he was there. And his perception was that I was not giving up. And he liked that. He liked that. He was a very abrupt, tough guy. And he saw me as a guy that wouldn't give up. And he saw himself in me. So he liked it. So he did business with me. So the point is that you never know. And that doesn't mean you pursue people that don't want you. Once you get a good, solid no, go ahead and move on. But, you know, sometimes you can solve a puzzle with just being creative or just being lucky, right? I was just pure lucky. But unless you're in the river, you're never going to get lucky. So.
Right.
Right? So be in the river.
Yep.
Be in the river.
Yep.
So that's the game. And look, at COVID time, how it's very easy to not be in the river. I mean, you got all the excuses in the world. But if you can be, I'm telling you, the fish are biting. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
I'm just convinced of it. The other thing I share with you is that right now is the best time I've ever seen to do estate planning. And the reason is wealthy people are very afraid right now. And they're afraid that the estate tax, which is almost $23 million, is going to be lifted and reduced back to $5 million or $2 million or something like that. Now, getting people to do estate planning when the minimum, when the exemption is $23 million is really hard. But getting them to do estate planning when they think it's going to go back to $5 million or $3 million is not that hard. And they can do things now in anticipation of that that will be smart no matter what happens. Okay? So let me give you two quick examples. One would be a family foundation. All right? So a client has got a required minimum distribution of, say, $80,000 a year, which is not uncommon. That's around, what, $2 million or something. And he or she is going to pay taxes on that. And they don't really need the money because they got a lot of money. So here's an idea. Give it to your family, create a family foundation, not a community foundation, a family foundation. Give it to the family foundation. You don't get the full deduction that you would if you gave it to a charity, a regular charity, a college or something like that, but you get a portion of it. I think you get around 60%. And over 10 years, you're going to have probably, several millions of dollars in there. And that is painless, but with a couple million dollars, you can pay your children, say, $5,000 a year to be on the board. That's just an extra individual, a husband and wife. You could pay them $10,000. You know, four or five people on the board. It's a great chance for the family to get together, and you get to give away out of the family foundation, you know, $20,000 or $25,000 a year in salaries to the kids, and they teach them about investments, how to be on a investment committee and how to run a family foundation and so forth. So a really good idea. One that I don't think anybody's talking about. The other one is a grantor annuity trust. They work great. You have to pay back the original grantor, the original principal, plus an interest rate. And the unique thing you have today, when I did my grant, I was paying about 5 years ago, I think I had to pay around 3% to myself before I could give any money to my children. Well, fortunately, the money has doubled, so I get my original money back and they get an equal amount. I'm putting it into a trust. The trust can pay them an income. They have potential to, my wife can be trustee for it. She can get an income from it if she needs it or not. So it can continue to grow and you continue to have control of it, by the way. And the same thing with the family foundation. You continue to manage the money. Okay. So The advantage is that it's not 3% today, it's 0.07%, okay? So it's nothing. that you have to pay yourself back. Instead of 3%, it's not even 1%. It's 0.7%. So it's very cheap to do it. Costs you around, let's say, the most $5,000 to set up one of these. You can do it as short as 2 years, or I did it 5 years because I figured that was a business cycle. Anyway, it's worked out great. They're a good thing. I've got a family foundation. I can give you a testimonial. It works great. It's a lot of fun. Kids love it. We get to give the money away. Of course, they want the money. You know, I said, no, you're never getting the money. Sorry. But you can do those. And I will tell you something. There's a tremendous appetite for that knowledge among wealthy people, not people with a million, but people with 10 million or 20 million. And you're always looking for a story to tell somebody like that. This is a great story. So you can do it as a webinar. You can have an estate planning attorney. You can do it as a joint deal with the estate planning attorney. And I just think you're going to get a lot of people tuning into that.
I agree.
Okay. So there's a concrete idea that I think will make you very sophisticated in the eyes of the clients. So anyway, I hope I haven't repeated myself. Did I tell you that idea before, or is that new?
No, that's new.
Okay.
That's new.
Good.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I think it is. It's cool. Let me know if you like it, if you do it. Let's see if we can generate some interest in the community. I think they'd enjoy it.
All right.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it, and congratulations again. In the face of a difficult environment, you're doing terrific. So, way to go.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Rob. Enjoy your time with the family.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
See you, Rob.
Bye.